Okay, our next speaker will be talking about the effect of soybean maturity on establishment of cover crops in upstate Missouri.
Thank you. We have a lot of highly erodible soils. They are classified as HEL. Some call them the soils from hell, but nonetheless, we don't have a lot of protection when it comes to soil erosion when we're looking at soybean residue on these soils. We've seen tons of talks on the benefits of cover crops. We do need to take into consideration a lot of agronomics when we're looking at risk management issues. There are benefits when it comes to pest management, and we're in a unique area that we have a lot of livestock too, so utilizing them in integrated grazing management systems is a real plus. But ultimately, we want to synergistically reduce our sediment and nutrient losses. As I mentioned, Missouri ranks very high in the number of mother cows, so anytime we can extend the grazing system into the wintertime, this is a real plus. We actually have a lot of producers that turn their livestock out on corn and soybean ground in the wintertime anyway. This was the first experiment I had coming to the University of Missouri, so it's going to be old, okay? It seems like cover crops have made a little circle, and so dug this thing out so that you guys can basically learn from experiences we had and maybe build on those experiences as well. So coming back from Michigan, we grew a lot of earlier maturing soybeans up there. I thought, you know, if we could put an earlier maturing bean, we may be able to plant these cover crops when our annual forage is a little bit earlier, and this would allow us the earlier establishment of this cover crop when it comes to benefiting us greater for reducing soil erosion, increasing our forage opportunities, and suppressing winter annual weeds as well. So it may one main objective, it carries over a few crops to evaluate the effect of soybean maturity group on the establishment of turnip, okay, annual ryegrass, winter rye, and collards. Okay, we also included a non-cover crop control, basically winter annual weeds as the check treatment, and these would be evaluated on their impact on corn yields as well as cis nematode egg population densities. Okay, just give you a little timeline on that. We started this in 2000. Planted soybeans, drill seeded our cover crop immediately after the soybean was harvested. Okay, it gave us a very applied planting date study then, okay, because you had a group two, a group three, and then a group four bean. Okay, rotated that to corn because we're very interested in the subsequent impact of these cover crops on the rotational crop. Okay, evaluated for cis nematode egg counts. That gave us a baseline egg count once the system was established, then rotated back to soybean, went back to the cover crop and back to corn, did another cis nematode egg count. The top line represents one location, the bottom line represents another location we had that was going on simultaneously as the first one. Okay, worked very effectively. A group two bean, if you can harvest earlier, basically group two bean, we were able to harvest about a week and a half to 3 weeks earlier than a group three bean, okay? So we're targeting around the 15th of September, or mid-September to early October. And then when we move into a group three bean, we're harvesting about the same time as a group four bean, or up to about 3 weeks earlier, okay? Obviously weather plays a role in that, okay? But we can gain a little bit of time when it comes to utilizing a group two bean, okay? This was a Pioneer 92B51. It was a 93B35 and then a 94B01. We typically grow a late group three to an early group four in this region, okay? If you like Proc A Nova, there's an interaction between years, okay? So for those people that like that, you would look up here at the 2000 and you'd say the yellow represents my group two bean, the green represents that group three, and the blue is the group four bean, and you'd say the group two bean yields similar to or greater than or three and four bean, in 2000 and 2002, but you go to that other location in 2001, okay, right in here in 2003, we have a pretty big opportunity cost with that group 2 bean compared to the 3 or the 4 bean. So if you like proc mixed, you just slam all these together and you say we have a basically a 9 bushel yield difference between our group 2 bean in the first column compared to our group 4 bean in the last column, and it's about a 13% difference in the yield. 9 bushel beans, it's an $81 opportunity cost at this point in time, so there's a little bit of risk with that group 2 bean, so there's opportunities for developing high yielding early maturing beans. Okay, anyway, so you look at the cover crops, 2000, we have a luscious salad bar of cover crops ready for grazing. We did some simulated grazing, harvested these by hand. So you'd let them get up to 8 inches, you'd cut them down to 2 inches, let them regrow, and so on and so forth. We'd add all those yields up. And there are some cover crops that have good winter tolerance and some that do not have so good a tolerance. Annual ryegrass, it's just a picture of following the group 2 bean in 2000. Regrowth, we cut it in November. And then you look in April, we were using a Marshall variety, has really good cold tolerance as a whole, but you do have issues with freezing this thing out at times as well. So if it's a variety named like Gulf or Abundant, we've done a lot of evaluations, they die out, and there are some that don't die out. So make sure you select whatever your goal is with the ryegrass as to whether you want it to winter kill or don't want it to winter kill. Anyway, turnips, following that early group 2, they didn't put on a big tuber or anything like that, but this was about as much biomass as we could get out of them. We could get one harvest generally following that group 2 bean. And really, we've done a lot of work with radishes. You've got it. September 1 is the cutoff date for radishes, and I think it would be the cutoff date for really good turnip production too. But nonetheless, following a group 3 or 4 bean, collards up on the top, turnips down here on the right. If you wait late, you'll have hungry cows. So you got to get in there before December 1, graze them, because that's usually when we get a cold stretch that they just go to mush. Okay. So, but nonetheless, following a group 3 or 4 bean just really isn't all that successful with the brassicas in our region. When we're looking at total cover crop biomass production, over here in the green is the cover crop yields. This is just 1 year for illustration purposes. Annual ryegrass, winter rye, our non-cover crop control. This is our winter annual weed biomass. Basically, if you have a lot of forage production or a lot of biomass production from your cover crop, you're going to reduce winter annual weed growth, and very significantly, winter rye does a spectacular job of reducing winter annual weed growth. And then we kind of get it's interesting because our biomass yields for our annual ryegrass, we put this over all of our harvests. This is following the group 2 bean, the group 3 bean, the group 4 bean. Ooh. And then we go to winter rye, following that group 2, 3, and 4 bean. It's basically a planting date response, okay? Your highest yields following group 2 bean, they drop off significantly when you get to that group 4, again with winter rye or annual ryegrass. Winter rye is obviously the superior biomass producer when it comes to comparing it to ryegrass. Now, the big question is, how is corn yield affected the next year? Okay, we're rotating to corn in these same plots, okay, and you can see the little yellow areas right here, okay, that's following winter rye, okay. You guys have all seen this before, it's a risk, okay. The biggest thing is quantifying how much risk that is. We've seen papers before that say, well, it grows out of, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal in our region because we have poorly drained soils, and there's a combination of effects that are taking place. Anyway, so your first set of columns are no cover crop control, basically some winter annual weeds, a plethora of chickweed, henbit or something like that, even some pennycress, and you name it, it's probably out there. But the main thing is you don't see a significant difference between our non-cover crop control, between the group 3 and 4 beans. You do see an interaction in corn yields when you're following those systems for those cover crops. Just to make this a little bit easier, the yellow line represents the corn yield for our following the group 2 bean. Okay, the gray box represents the LSD. So if it's outside of that box, it's significantly greater than or less than. We do see a reduction in yield following with the winter rye. It's reducing corn yields following that group 2 bean. We go to the group 3 bean again, and our ryegrass actually reducing yields too. Group 3 bean, we just see winter rye reducing it. It's kind of unique, but following our annual ryegrass, actually had, that's the only time we've seen an increase in yield with annual ryegrass. Done a lot of years of work with it, but anyway, turnips and collards, we just don't get a lot of growth with them. They're similar to our non-cover crop control. Your four beans, same story, so third verse. So let's look at winter at cyst nematode. So these are grouped together, basically. The 2002 sampling of egg counts, kind of our baseline, and then the 2004 is from the same location. We see no significant difference in egg population densities between our cover crops, and this is just following the group 2 bean, because this one gave us the most biomass production. Okay, turnips or brassicas are supposed to help us reduce cyst nematode as well. At our other location, again, no significant reduction compared to the non-cover crop control when it comes to cyst nematode egg population densities. Now, there are issues when it comes to your cover crop turning into a weed, so just keep that in mind. You've got to be aggressive on it sometimes to control it as well. But in summary, earlier maturing soybean did allow us to establish cover crops 1 to 3 weeks earlier. Our group 2 soybeans had yields that were similar in some years to our group 4 bean, but over 4 years of research, the group 2 beans had about a 13% reduction in grain yield compared to a later maturing bean cultivar. Cover crop biomass yields were greater following that group 2 bean, followed by the group 3 and 4 cultivars. Our corn grain yields following our annual ryegrass were generally similar to the non-cover crop control. Okay, depending upon the soybean maturity group, but our yields following winter rye were 17% lower, okay, and that's consistently compared to the non-cover crop control. Our cover crops did not reduce cyst nematode egg population densities compared to the non-seeded control, and last but not least, how are we doing on time?
3 minutes,
awesome. There are some other considerations. When you're growing these for just a straight cover crop, there are some issues when you get into the forage crop opportunities, okay? Crop insurance may be issues, herbicide carryover potential. At that point in time, we were using glyphosate for weed control and everything, so we didn't have any residual issues, okay? Times have changed. We have glyphosate-resistant water hemp and mayor's tail and you name it. Now we're using a lot of residual herbicides, so carryover potential on a lot of these things are going to affect brassicas and other things that we're putting out there. Herbicide restrictions and residue potential, okay? If you read that label, okay, you probably can't feed what's grown into some of that stuff that's planted as a cover crop, so keep that in mind as well. Latitude and location, okay? We're in upstate Missouri, okay? Some of this may apply, some of it may not apply, because as you move south, there are different opportunities, and you go north as well. Don't take everything that works or doesn't work here as something that won't work or will work in your region as well. Any quick questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, the question is, why are we seeing a reduction in corn yield?
you've probably got a several things going on. You've got allelopathy, you've got tying up of nitrogen. I mean, we put 180 pounds of nitrogen on this study, okay? I thought nitrogen would be a non-limiting factor, okay, on that. You've got cool, wet soils, okay? We terminated that rye. I mean, it's the textbook thing. 2 weeks before, and you know, you plant into it, you don't want it to get out of hand or anything like that. So you've got a combination of things. So soybeans are very resilient to a lot of different cover crops. Corn, you have to be careful on what you're doing there. I mean, grasses, you've got to be really careful. And we're trying to wean down the rates of wheat because it seems to have less of an impact on corn yields than our other grasses, but you've got to keep it economical as well. Okay, we were targeting winter annual forages, so you're up at around 100 pounds of seed per acre on rye. Okay, wean that baby back, maybe it'll have less of an allelopathic effect. Plus, you got to keep it economical. Okay, about 40 pounds is all that an airplane can get on. Okay, on this one we did. So as we go forward, I've got to wean that back because you've got to think of the cost effectiveness of these. Okay, so I'd wean that back to, we're going to a 40-4-2. Okay, 40 pounds of wheat, 4 pounds of radishes, 2 pounds of turnips. I do like a brassica in there, but they're tough to get established, especially in beans. Okay.
All right, let's take a break.